Mr. Hanson.
May it please the court. Myriad's entire legal argument in this case turns on its assertion that isolated DNA is different than DNA.
Would you mind starting with standing first?
I would be happy to, Your Honor.
Because I think that the government is also going to speak to the DNA portion, but you're the only one who's going to tell us about standing. So why don't you start with that?
Well, I think I think Myriad has basically conceded half of the standing argument, which is that the clients, the plaintiffs in this case, are ready, willing, and able to engage in the behavior.
I have a question about that. I think that we need to look at the declarations. You know, I'm sorry to do this to you, but as you know, standing is something the court has to look at, even sua sponte. The declarations of the ready, willing, and able, in terms of the University of Pennsylvania folks, as opposed to all of the others, not one of them says that they would be willing to. They say they'll consider doing it.
That's
correct.
They'll
decide if they want to do it.
That's correct.
Why isn't that your classic Lujan problem? The Lujan, the Sri Lanka Lujan, you know, the Egypt Lujan. Why isn't this the classic, you haven't said for sure you want to do this. You're too tentative, and therefore you don't have a real injury that needs to be redressed.
Well, of course, Dr. Oster, who also was stopped by Myriad's actions,
Oster is a different position, but how about the University of Pennsylvania? Because they're the ones that got the problem with Oster is he didn't get the same kind of letter.
No, but he was forced to stop his behavior and did, in fact, stop his behavior.
Okay, but with respect to the University of Pennsylvania, you've got a stronger letter, but you've got weaker affidavits.
Why aren't their affidavits
a problem for the reasons Judge Moore has pointed out?
I think what the declarations in that case say is we were sufficiently intimidated that we'd have to rethink our position. But we do this every day. We sequence genes every day. We sequence genes other than BRCA every day. It would be a very trivial matter for us to start sequencing the BRCA1 and BRCA2 genes, and there's no reason to think that they wouldn't. I agree with Your Honors that the language is somewhat more tentative, but there's certainly no reason to think they wouldn't immediately begin, given the fact that this is what they do for a living.
Well, the reason to think they wouldn't immediately begin is they didn't say it. All of your other declarations, and I have to think this was a very careful wording choice on their part, because all of your other declarations is, I would start it tomorrow. But these two individuals say they would consider. They would decide whether they want to offer it. They may not. And they might not. You're right, it would be easy for them to do, but yet they chose not to say that they would do it.
That's correct.
Is that because they're under the influence of the overriding university?
I think it's partly that. I think it's partly because they're under the influence of the cease and desist letter. I think, frankly, that had a major effect on the university. I think the university is enormously skittish. But we represent the plaintiffs in this case, include organizational plaintiffs, where we have 150,000 physicians and clinicians.
I just need to go one by one a little bit. I hate to do
fine.
That since you have 150,000 one by one.
We won't go one by one.
But these two have the strongest amount of evidence in terms of the second prong that's necessary for declaratory judgment jurisdiction, the immediate controversy or Myriad having done an affirmative act towards them, which is why I'm focused on them. So do you have any answer at all to the Lujan? I mean, can you distinguish Lujan in any way? Is there anything that you can tell me to make me think I shouldn't conclude that they are exactly within the Lujan umbrella and too tentative to be considered an immediate injury?
Well, I don't think under MedImmune, I don't think they have to be immediately at risk of being sued or, for that matter, immediately prepared to engage in the behavior. I think what is relevant here is that they are ready, they are able to immediately begin doing this, and if these patents are invalid.
But we don't know if they're willing to. That's the problem. Ready. There's a million people who might be ready to do something, but if they're not willing to, that doesn't mean that they've been injured by not being able to.
Well, then there's nothing to suggest that they're not willing. What the declaration says is, given the fact that we've been threatened with a lawsuit, we're going to have to stop and think about whether to do this or not.
Well, yes, but the predicate for their position is that, assuming this, the problem that was entailed in the threat goes away, then what will happen? And there, they still qualify. So it's not as if they're saying, "Well, we still may be sued." The premise is that there's no problem. Then what do you do? And their answer is, we would seriously, immediately consider.
Actually, so we have an earnest desire to consider it.
Yes.
Yeah, that's very qualified.
I recognize that is different than what the other declarations say. That's why we have other plaintiffs. That's why we have, that's one of the reasons we have other plaintiffs and other declarants. The other declarants are equally at threat. If the 150,000 physicians I represent started sequencing tomorrow, is there any doubt in the world that Myriad would start suing somebody?
Do you not recognize the profound impact that would have on our patent system if anyone who was ready, willing, and able to compete tomorrow could bring a DJ action against the patentee in any form of their choosing without any affirmative act directed at all towards them by the patentee?
But I don't think under MedImmune there is a requirement either that there be something directly attacking one of the particular plaintiffs. I think the only question is, do they have a reasonable basis for believing that if they engaged in the behavior they would get sued? And given the fact that we represent virtually every competitor Myriad has, the notion that all of their competitors would start infringing their patents, but they have no reasonable fear that anyone will be sued, seems to me to strain belief. If all of the clients I represent start infringing tomorrow, Myriad has no choice but to abolish its business or to sue somebody. And that's precisely why we have standing here.
Would you mind changing now to the redressability? Because
yes.
It was brought up in the reply brief, but I think that it's a point that I'd love to...
Yes. What is interesting to me about the redressability argument, there are two things interesting. One is that they don't identify any particular claims that they think will get in the way.
Well, probes and primers.
They refer, but in order to look at whether there are claims that get in the way, you have to look at the specific claim, and it might depend on how the probe and primer claims are written. And they very carefully don't identify any particular probe or primer claim that they claim we will infringe on. The second thing is, buried within their argument that probes and primers are an impediment is in fact the assertion that they're going to sue us if we start infringing on their patent. If you want a contemporary threat of suit, that's what their redressability argument ultimately amounts to, is we've got other claims and we're going to sue you if you engage in the behavior, even if you win in court.
Was this, the redressability was raised in this court, I believe, for the first time in the reply brief. Was
that's
it raised
correct.
In the district court at all?
It was not.
Uh-huh. Moreover, I realize this is standing. On the other hand, this is a pretty factual sort of an issue, and it just struck me as something would be difficult for us to sort through the entire record and try to find a particular claim that would be a blocking claim where we haven't been directed and the district court hasn't addressed to the issue of redressability.
I think that's exactly right. It also turns a little bit on the question of whether whole genome sequencing is included within the claims, which we think it is. Whole genome sequencing does not use BRCA1 and BRCA2 probes and primers. The scientists I represent can today sequence the BRCA1 gene along with the rest of the genome without using any probes or primers that Myriad owns a patent for. Mm-hmm. And that's why the problem of Myriad not identifying which claims it thinks are important is significant.
I take it you took no comfort from Mr. Castanis's response to my question about the whole genome sequencing?
I did not take comfort. When I read the precise language of the claims, 282.1, for example, a isolated DNA that codes for the BRCA1 polypeptide, that's contained in the whole genome. And so if I sequence the whole genome, I own an isolated BRCA1 gene that codes for the polypeptide.
Okay, one last question on this, and then I'll let you move on. But are you saying that the unchallenged primers and probes, the claims that exist, the primers and probes would not be infringed if you get to do exactly what you say you want to do?
That's correct. And in one final point, we don't concede that the probe and primer claims are valid. We haven't challenged them in this case, but we don't see them as a valid impediment to continuing.
Would they not be infringed if you were to practice the invention as you?
There are methods by which we could practice the invention that would not infringe probes or primers in any way, shape, or form.
Okay.
So to turn to the merits, the composition claims, Myriad's entire legal argument here is that the composition, isolated DNA, is different than DNA. Myriad's entire business is built on the proposition that isolated DNA and DNA are identical.
Mr. Hansen, the court held that mere purification of natural material is not patentable subject matter. If I want to make compound C, and I react A with B, and I get C, and I filter off C, there's a little bit of A in it. And to get it out, that's purification of C. Here, what we have is a gene which, in its natural state, is covalently bonded with other genetic material. So it's not just purifying the gene, it isolating is not purifying it. So why didn't the district court err when it focused on purification rather than
isolation? I think, in fact, that cuts exactly the opposite way. All Myriad does here is isolate the gene. All Myriad does is simply snip the gene out of the body.
Well, that's not so easy. I mean, you don't just go in there, and it's not just sitting there.
No, that's right. But the difficulty, we don't reward patents for the difficulty of the work, and Myriad didn't invent the difficulty of the work. Myriad used methods well known in the science in order to do that. And the way Myriad wrote its claims, if I tomorrow invented a way to take a pair of tweezers and simply pull a gene out, I would have infringed on this patent. It wouldn't have been a difficult process, but I would have infringed on this patent. All that this patent requires is that you pull the gene out. Now let's look at the gene once it's pulled out. It has the exact same nucleotides. It has the nucleotides have the exact same composition.
The fact is, you say pull it out as if it's sitting there next to these other two materials, like diamond may be in a mine next to iron and uranium. But it's not just sitting there. Well, this isn't just research by tweezers.
But the claim is written to do that, to reach search by tweezers. Let me give a different metaphor that might be helpful. If my kidney in my body is in its natural state, if a surgeon cuts me open and slices out my kidney and takes it out and holds it in his hand, it's an isolated kidney. But it's still a kidney. It's not an invention.
We don't want any kidney problems.
And the fact that the surgeon used a scalpel instead of a chemical is exactly irrelevant. It just because...
Well, I'm not sure about that, and I think this gets to a really important issue in the case, at least for me. And I'd like to try to draw you out a little on this.
Sure.
There are lots of chemicals. This touches a bit, perhaps, on the bat and the tree that Mr. Castanhas was talking about, right. But in a chemical setting. There are lots of complex molecules which can be changed by lopping off some portion of the complex molecule and creating another molecule which was, in a sense, embedded in the first molecule.
Agreed.
All you've done is broken one or two covalent bonds, and you've created a molecule which A, does not appear in nature by hypothesis, and B, may have functionality that's very different from the original. So why isn't that at least analogous to this setting, whereas, as Judge Lurie's pointed out, you're not cutting in the sense of getting a pair of tweezers or scissors, or for that matter, a scalpel, but you're cutting by a chemical process that alters the chemical identity of the object that's being extracted.
Right, but precisely your example says that the new thing we've created has new functions, and that's what the law requires. It has to be different in character and kind. It has to be markedly different. The Supreme Court uses a lot of different phrases. So let's talk about whether the DNA, the isolated DNA, is different in any of those degrees. Well, Myriad has essentially offered no explanation, and they can't. Think what their business is. You send them a sample of blood, and they isolate the DNA from your blood. They then write you back a letter. The letter doesn't say, well, you've got a mutation in your isolated DNA, but I have no idea what's going on in your body.
But the functionality, I guess, is really the extent to which it's amenable to testing.
Well, but
you can't test the wrapped up DNA in the original form in the body, or at least difficult. But you can test the isolated DNA. So you've established a functionality there.
No, well, you can't use gold while it's in the mountain to make jewelry. But once you take it out of the mountain, it's still gold. My kidney example, you can't transplant my kidney while it's in my body, but the fact that it's an isolated kidney, you can now transplant it. It doesn't make it less a kidney.
The functionality is the same, it's a different material because, as Judge Bryson pointed out, you've broken covalent bonds. If you've got in the body material, genetic material of 100 nucleotides, and you make certain cleavages and you pull one out containing 500, that's a different material.
No, I think, with respect, Your Honor, I think not. I think the fact that the way in which you pull the thing out involves breaking covalent bonds as opposed to fibers or veins or arteries or rocks is irrelevant. The relevant question is the thing, once I've taken it out, identical to the thing that was inside?
If it's 500 rather than 1,000. Isn't that right?
Well, half of gold is different than all of the gold. But
gold is gold.
And DNA is DNA. Oh. My time is up, Your Honor, but if I could have 1 minute to talk about the method claims, since Justice is not going to talk about
those.
Can
I ask you one more question first?
Sure.
The government's not going to talk about this either. They raise a salient point, which is the whole gene versus an isolated part. You would like to have everything invalid, and the government sort of really straddles the middle ground.
Right.
They say cDNA should be patentable, and you do have one cDNA claim here. It's claim 2 of the 282 patent. You can say no, but you do. So then the other question is...
I am going to say no, but I'll try and convince you.
But the other thing is, what about the whole gene versus the isolated part? Because just now you were talking about, well, the functions are all the same, but that's not really true, isn't it? I mean, aren't there a whole bunch of things you can do with a 15-segment piece of DNA, the isolated part, that you can't do with the whole gene? Aren't there all different functions and capabilities?
No.
And the government draws this distinction. So while they're on your side over here, they're not for this purpose.
No is the answer to your question, I think. First of all, none of the claims, including 282, is limited just to cDNA. The claim is DNA that has the sequence. There's some degree of ambiguity in that. If you then look to see in the specifications, they make it very clear that includes not just cDNA, but, quote, genomic DNA, quote, including the introns. Myriad is not claiming any patent. None of the claims in this case refer solely to cDNA. But second, talking about the functionality, Myriad identifies really only two functions other than the ones we've talked about, the probes and primers functions. Those are only a function. It is true that isolated DNA can be used as probes and primers. In so using them, all you're doing is replicating the way the body uses the DNA. You're using the DNA to bond to the opposing strands. It's exactly what the body does. Moreover, probes and primers are in the same as gold can be put in a jewelry once you take it out of the body, so too you can use the probe or primer as the DNA as a probe or primer, but that doesn't make it anything different. It's still the same DNA.
Mr. Hansen, you have...
Can I ask just one quick question? I mean, are you familiar with the notion of a racemic composition?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I am not.
Racemic. I'll leave it there.
Okay. I recognize I'm way over, Your Honor.
You are way over. If your colleague wants to cede time to you, then that's up to him.
Can I have 2 minutes? 1 minute? I just want to address the method claims, since they're not going to. With respect to the method claims, Your Honor was quite correct in suggesting that all they involve is comparing, and let me give you this example. If there are people who put their entire genome sequence on the web, in addition, the BRCA1 sequence can be found.
Why don't you respond to the Prometheus argument about determining?
I will do that. Let me finish and then I'll do Prometheus. If your law clerks went back to your chambers and put the whole genome sequence of someone like Professor Church at Harvard and the BRCA1 sequence side by side on your computer screen, and you went back into chambers and all you did was let your eyes go back and forth between the two to see if they were the same or the different, George Church, who sequenced his own gene, would not have infringed the method claims. Your law clerks would not have infringed the method claims. You would have infringed the method claims. Now, with respect to Prometheus, Prometheus does, in fact, involve transformative activities. And in our view, the process of sequencing DNA does not involve any transformations. And the process of comparing doesn't involve any transformations. And my example explains exactly why that is. You don't have to isolate the DNA in order to compare the two pieces of DNA. You all would have infringed just by looking back and forth and thinking to yourself that they're the same or they're different.
Thank you, Mr. Hansen.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Sorry, Neil.